Hey, it's Anna Sale, and I want to thank you for listening to Death, Sex, and Money, where I explore the big questions and hard choices that are often left out of polite conversation. You can hear new episodes ad-free every week on Amazon Music, where you can find Death, Sex, and Money and all of your Slate favorites without the ads.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Hello, everyone. I am Anna Sale, host of the podcast Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC Studios. And I'm here to take your calls right now, along with my colleague, Kai Wright, host of the United States of Anxiety. Kai is joining me by phone. Hello, Kai.
Hey, Anna, and hello, everybody. So today we want to hear from you, listeners of both of our shows, about how you're feeling right now. This reality of the COVID-19 global pandemic is sinking in for all of us here in the U.S. Things are, of course, changing quickly in all of our lives. And so we want to hear from you about what's making you worried, how this pandemic is affecting your immediate and future plans, and how you're coping with all of this uncertainty.
And the phone lines are open right now. The number to call is 844-745-8255. That's 844-745-8255. Kai and I are both in places that are feeling major disruptions in our routines this week. I'm in the Bay Area. Kai, you are in New York. And you are joining this conversation by phone, actually, because you have a cold that would not have prevented you from coming into the studio at any other time. But it's a signal of just how different our reality is right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, it really is quite a minor cold, but I just feel so guilty being in public with a cough and I'm not certain, right? Like, none of us can get tested, so I don't know for a fact that I am not positive for COVID-19, and so I just decided last night to stay home. And I should note that that's going to mean things for this conversation. I'm on the phone. I live in Brooklyn. We live very close to one another in Brooklyn. There will be no doubt trains and horns. My boyfriend is also working at home. I cannot control when he is going to walk into the room and shout. So bear with us.
We're in it. We're in it. And thank you for modeling good behavior for all of us and just staying home. This type of adjustment is normal. It's changing so quickly. And that's what we want to talk with all of you about today. Just like, what's happening right now in this rapidly changing situation? In addition to the physical health risks of this pandemic, there's an emotional weight to all of this uncertainty, all that we're feeling right now. So that's why we want to talk together. We want to gather around together and talk about that. We're curious to hear what's at the forefront of your thoughts as we end this week.
The phone lines are open right now, so give us a call. Again, the number is 844-745-8255. That's 844-745-8255. We're also watching Twitter, so you can tweet at us at Death Sex Money or using the hashtag US of Anxiety 2020. And we all have a lot of questions, but right now the idea for this conversation, it's to gather and to share what we're noticing. Because even though we are becoming more physically distant than usual, that is the social distancing that we all have to do, we're also going through this together. And, you know, Anna, what's funny for me is that I guess it's often the case in times like these. I feel much more in touch with my friends and family right now than I probably ever normally would. Like, I'm really bad at answering text messages, and I'm just answering all of them now. I don't know if that's what's going on for you.
I'm also really finding that, and also my neighbors. I'm talking to them, my neighbors in Berkeley in the East Bay here in California, more than I usually do, and we're, creating text chains, talking about grocery runs. in a way that we haven't before. And I want to acknowledge as calls come in that while Kai and I are both in places that are really feeling change right now, there are a lot of you in the United States that are sort of like absorbing the news, but maybe haven't felt it as deeply yet. But you're probably feeling it in different ways. Maybe you're watching the stock market. Maybe you're having events that you needed, were thinking about getting income from, be canceled. So we want to make sure you're included in the conversation as well. You don't need to feel like you're in one of the hot spots to join this conversation. And actually, one of the first callers I want to bring in is Katie Kirby, who is a Death, Sex, and Money listener, a licensed social worker in Illinois, who counsels college students. Katie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Anna.
Hi, thanks for calling in. What's been on your mind this week?
So this week I've definitely been thinking a lot about just how best to be there for my clients as well as for myself. So like you mentioned, I am a licensed social worker and I'm seeing clients and helping them navigate their own mental health concerns. And I also have a respiratory chronic illness. And so in this time where there are these respiratory symptoms and really severe viruses going around, I also have to be really mindful of how to protect myself. And that balance has really been on my mind a lot lately.
What were you doing this week? Were you going into work?
Yeah, so this week I have still been going into work and seeing clients face-to-face when they do come in. But we are investigating and exploring options to be able to do teletherapy or over-the-phone sessions as a protective measure for really everyone involved.
I imagine Katie, that's been quite a pull. Oh, go ahead, Kai.
I was going to ask you, Katie, this is Kai. I have a close friend who is also a social worker, and I was talking to her last night, and she has a lot of anxiety about her own, about the health of her clients and wanting to, feeling like she really wants to be in touch with them right now, but also wanting to practice the social distancing she's supposed to practice. And not wanting to put them at risk. And I just wonder if that's a concern for you too and how you deal with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been interesting. I think most of my clients are in a relatively healthy life stage. And so I honestly haven't had tons of clients who are really concerned about the virus spreading or about their own specific health in regards to it. And I think that might be just a product of the life stage they are in. But it is something I'm very mindful of as well, because we don't know who exactly has been exposed or if someone might have it but be asymptomatic. And so I think I've been trying to take as many precautions as possible, and that is part of the reason why our department is considering different options for the remote sessions.
And just one more question for you, Katie. Are you finding that you're disclosing some of your personal health information to coworkers or clients in ways that you otherwise wouldn't?
Yeah, that's been a really interesting part to navigate. And luckily, some of my coworkers had already known about my health status, which has definitely made it easier to be proactive and have these planning conversations. But it is something that is a much more immediate concern now, figuring out what and how much to disclose to clients and when to do that if I feel like that's appropriate.
Yeah. Well, Katie, please keep in touch over these next few weeks and take care of yourself. And I hope your clients are able to take care of themselves as well, too. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks so much. I hope you both stay well as well.
Thanks, Katie.
Tierra in Omaha is calling in, who is a college student. Tierra, are you there?
Yes.
Hey, what have you been thinking about this week? What are you noticing?
I guess I've just had a lot of my main focus right now has kind of just been trying to make sure my housing is going to be secure, because I am a student that lives on campus housing, and trying to make sure that my work study job is actually going to stick around. If and when this virus kind of ends, or so it thankfully, I mean, my university hasn't had like a Harvard situation where we they haven't like kicked us all out, but so we get to stay and we're cool here. But my work study job, though, I am aware now as of this morning that I will get to keep my job and work my regular hours for the next 2 weeks while our spring break is happening. But after that, we don't really know. They're not really sure right now if me and the other student workers at my job are going to basically have a job until probably this summer, if not fall.
Wow. So you're feeling a question about your housing security. You're thinking about whether your wages are secure. And are you, what kind of, like, do you feel like you need to start coming up with contingency plans, or do you feel just stuck right now? How are you feeling?
I don't even know, I guess. I'm not really sure what I'm feeling yet, because it's kind of like my university waited a little bit longer than I think other places, other universities did, to kind of get the news out and make these, like, really big decisions. And so I'm kind of, I don't want to say waiting for like the hammer to drop, but like I'm waiting for something, you know, more news to come next. I kind of feel like things are still in transition, and so I haven't really even necessarily made any major decisions yet. But yeah, I'm just kind of, I guess I would say stuck. That's the right way to put it. Just kind of stuck in limbo, which is, I don't like that. I am a Capricorn. I love stability. I don't love this, you know, the instability that is kind of taking place right now. Yeah, so it's just a really tough spot.
Do you mind if I ask you, what are the consequences for you if you do lose housing? You know, I think we hear about this in such an abstract way. What would it mean for you if you have to leave?
I know I, in some ways, am lucky because I have relatives and, like, immediate family that live near, that live in my city, and I can go home. You know, they're really only, like, a few buses away. However, I, like many people, like many other students, even if I do have a home to go to, it's not the most, like, positive and healthy space for me to be. So I don't think, I mean, I wouldn't be, you know, like, couch surfing, I don't think, but I wouldn't necessarily be in as stable of a place and as healthy of an environment than if I were living, you know, in on-campus housing.
Yeah.
Tierra,
well, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, please keep us posted. And when you mentioned, like, bus rides away, like, even getting on a bus, if you're losing your dorm housing, is not going to feel necessarily like something that feels like the safest thing to do right now. So keep us posted on what happens. And we'll be thinking about you. Keep us posted.
Yeah, thank you.
Jason in Charlottesville, are you there?
Yeah, this is Jason.
Hey, Jason, what have you been thinking about this week?
For me, this has a lot of echoes for 9/11, with 9/11, but I think for a different reason than a lot of other people are feeling. And for me, it's a very deeply personal situation. So around 9/11, my dad got sick. And so over the 2 years after 9/11, I was dealing with first his illness and then his passing. And now, right before Christmas, I had to sort of take over for my mom's affairs because of her progressive dementia. And so while everyone else is paying attention to coronavirus, I am paying attention to getting my mom's affairs in order, getting her house sold, getting her settled into a place here in Charlottesville with us. And so it's a very familiar note of almost melancholy that I'm not experiencing what everybody else is experiencing.
Yeah, like you're experiencing something really hard, that's both kind of part of what everybody else is experiencing, but also very personal and different.
Yeah.
I wonder if, but then how do you manage it with the concerns about I assume your mother's age and her being more vulnerable to COVID-19, even amid, it sounds like you might have both concerns.
Oh, I definitely do. And it's hard with her condition to get her to understand that, you know, we're not trying to keep her from going to the grocery store because we're trying to control her. It's because, no, like, there are real concerns with going out to eat every day and going out to do her regular shopping. And there's lots of those small moments where we just try to address this one small issue, and she very much is attaching it emotionally to other issues, other concerns. So navigating that with her is really difficult. And in addition, you know, this past week I spent most of the week cleaning out her house, and I got to, you know, I missed a week of my kids, you know, before all of this hit, and I missed the conversations that my wife had to have about, with them about why all of this is happening and why people are so concerned. So I really, you know, there is this feeling of missing out on something, not something that I think anybody was looking forward to, but missing out on something that's important and that, you know, I'm not getting to share that with my kids. I'm not getting to walk with them through that. Instead, I have this other thing that we're all walking through as a family, but that has really just consumed me these last couple of weeks.
Mm. And I wonder, because it just sounds so difficult what you're describing in terms of dealing with the dementia. Have you discovered any resources that are popping up here that other people might want to know about? Or just, is there anybody, can you turn anywhere to help for advice about how to deal with this with someone with dementia?
I think that one of the most valuable resources has been our medical professionals. We were able to connect my mother with a really great specialist that specializes in dementia, and he was able to sort of set for us the tone of what the next few months are going to look like in terms of getting her evaluated, getting her connected with services. And he, you know, it's not his job to actually connect us with those services. That's us. But, you know, when I first walked into her house and realized that the heat hadn't been on for 2 months and it was 30 degrees inside, you know, there was a moment of just having no idea how we were going to handle this, and connecting her with that physician, getting sort of a feel for what he was going to be able to help her with, and thus what he was going to be able to help us with. It was a huge relief. It made the whole situation feel manageable, whereas before I really was in a fog about how we were going to manage everything.
Jason, thanks for calling in. So much happening with your family. We'll be thinking about you.
Thank you.
Our intern, Ayo Ospemiro from Death, Sex, and Money, she compiled a list of helpful resources from CDC virus information to work-from-home tips to hand-washing songs. So you can find that at deathsexmoney.org/coronavirus. Speaking of resources, we all need to help each other figure out how to find some help during this time. I'm Anna Sale, host of Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC, and I am joined by Kai Wright, host of the United States of Anxiety from WNYC, and we are taking your calls live right now about COVID-19. The phone number is 844-745-8255, 844-745-8255. We're also streaming live on Facebook Live. You can tweet us at Death Sex Money or use the hashtag USofAnxiety2020. We're just talking about what we're noticing about how this is changing our lives so far. This is just the beginning of this, but we want to talk and gather this afternoon. I want to bring into the conversation Chelsea. You're in Italy.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Chelsea. How are you?
I'm okay. How's it going?
I'm good. You sound very cheerful, which is nice. Chelsea, tell me what's happening in your life where you are in Naples, Italy.
Well, so I'm in Naples, which luckily, well, I mean, all of Italy is kind of a crap show right now, but basically the hardest hit regions are in the north and we're in the south. So we're not like the epicenter of the pandemic, but it's still pretty crazy.
What's happened in your life? What's changed this week?
Well, actually, right before this phone call, I learned of a new ordinance that that Campania region, which is my region, they put out today, that you can't leave your house. Except to go grocery shopping, to go to the pharmacy, or for like a medical emergency. When you leave your house, you have to have this document, which is like an autocertificazione, to say that like you're going to your house, to the pharmacy, to the grocery store, or to work, basically. and they have police checks as well. Another big thing that I've noticed is lines, just crazy lines at the supermarkets. If you try to go to the supermarket, you have to stand in a line 1 meter apart, and before, because they only let in a certain amount of people, and before you go in, you put on gloves and they put hand sanitizer on your hands. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, how often are you going grocery shopping? How do you manage your shopping list when that's the situation? How are you thinking about it?
I personally left the house on Wednesday to go grocery shopping, and every like couple of days, honestly. But it is more of an ordeal. And I'm also super stressed about it because I have a rare lung disease, so I could be totally screwed, honestly. Yeah.
You know, Chelsea, like, I feel so comforted by your chipper.
You know, wait, where things are still scaling up, we haven't reached that scale. If we come to that, do you have one piece of advice about how we should manage ourselves?
You mean like individually or?
Yeah. Like, what should I do? Me specifically.
What should you do?
How would you advise if I?
What are you doing while you're home?
Huh?
What are you doing while you're home? So you said stock up on groceries, and then when you're home, what are you doing to fill your time, and how are you managing?
Because I can easily work from home. I taught English for like 2 years, and then I recently just changed jobs a month ago, and I'm doing like website development and that kind of stuff for a pharmacy here. So it's very easy to work from home. So I feel very lucky for that.
Thank you for calling in and creating that visual for us about what it's like to go to the grocery store.
Stay safe, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Tara in Durham, North Carolina is on the line. Tara, hi.
Hello.
Hi. You're a healthcare worker?
Yes, I work in public health.
Yeah.
And
how are you feeling this week?
A little stressful.
Yeah,
it's a lot of confusing information. I mostly work with Medicaid patients, and so very vulnerable. We also haven't expanded Medicaid in North Carolina, so the sickest of the sick don't have access to care in most of the South. And there's just not a lot of information, and very confusing. We're getting a lot of messages all day at the hospital. Even personally, a lot of my friends and family are reaching out to me, my baby boomer parents. My dad decided to get on a flight this week for no reason. and it's just been incredibly, I don't know what the hell he's doing. He sent me a picture with him holding Lysol in the airport. I was like, I'm going to fucking kill you. And, you know, that's the population that's really most at risk, immunocompromised, older folks. And so I think, I don't know what has to happen for people to realize this isn't a joke. We are not, our healthcare system is, we aren't ready. I mean, I think we're, look at what's happening in parts of Italy right now. We just listened to that caller. I mean, the grocery store, we can't imagine being so many feet away from folks at the grocery store. So I think it's just mass communication. And the reality is the Trump administration cut so much that not only are we weren't ready before, there's not enough, you know, beds. And so it's incredibly stressful all day at the hospital. And we're trying to do, the folks that can work from home try to, but I just think we're so overwhelmed, and even my parents, I mean, I think, I don't know what's more stressed out, but my dad not even understanding what an incubation period is, or just basic healthcare stuff, and my mom's like, you know, Barb emailing me or texting me a question about this. I'm like, y'all, there is the CDC, kind of. So,
Tara, I have a question about yourself. I know a lot of us are concerned about healthcare workers and people who work in public health, and just how much you guys are going to have to go through, and how you're, and whether or not you're going to be overtaxed and burn out. So I'm curious about the conversation you're having with yourself, or that it's having amongst your colleagues, about sort of how healthcare workers and public health people are taking care of themselves and each other.
Yeah, right now, I mean, I've been talking a lot of that with my coworkers. You know, we have two new employees starting next week on our team, and we can't move their start date because they need to get paid as well. They left another job. And so we're doing virtual. And so it is, everyone is incredibly stressed out. And, you know, I planted a garden the other day. I've always had a garden. I think we just have to find ways to take care of each other. I will say I do work with like an amazing group of individuals, but I do think the communication has been all over the place from the hospital system. I had three people text me this morning, how do you get tested? And so it's like there's a website, but no one knows where the website is. But and for ourselves, like I don't feel great today, so I'm actually at home. My fever is 99, and someone texted me that I made out with from fucking Tinder 3 weeks ago that went to Paris and San Francisco, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
Wait, so you just had a Tinder date 3 weeks ago, and you like, oh my gosh, there's a lot happening. There's a lot happening
also
in your life right now.
I didn't know you were a global traveler. Like, come on, let a girl know. I'm a public health person. I wouldn't have made out with you. Risk reduction.
You know what, Tara?
That might have been an attractive idea 3 weeks ago that somebody's a jet setter.
It did. See, another reason we need to fund public health. So,
okay, Tara, before you get off the line, I want you to talk to people in the control room and tell us what are your favorite websites that instead of like when we're having conversations with our loved ones and they're telling us what they're hearing from friends and like what are your favorite places as a public health worker where we should be looking for the most definitive information? Because
I think the best thing we could do is just take a collective deep breath. New York Times has this great page right now, and it's all about being calm. Our immune systems are so tied to how much anxiety we have. The CDC really is the go-to place. It's boring. Their infographics are trash. But really, let's just take care of each other, check in on your elderly folks, your friends and family, and just, you know, let's remember this is a test of humanity, like how nice we're going to be to our neighbors. And so I feel like there is the public health language. The most important thing to do is really just let's stop hoarding masks and, like, you know, let's plant victory gardens and remember that we're, like, hopefully we're all kind to each other. I think this is really a pause to really test us. So I think we have the health information, but, you know, wash your hands and call out all the men. I think this is a lesson in patriarchy. We've all seen men go to the bathroom. They're going to be spreading corona. They need to be seeing Toto, like,
Kai,
a few times.
Manage your people.
I can testify that while I am as hard as anybody on men in the bathroom not washing their hands, it does disgust me normally. I do see an enormous amount of hand washing the last couple of weeks, so I think we're heading in the right direction.
Good. We are proud of you.
Okay, Tara, thank you for being in touch. I want to talk to you again to hear how things are going where you're working. And thank you for your service in the healthcare system. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you guys so much.
I want to make sure, Jason from Charlottesville, that you see a comment that we just got on Twitter. Someone sent to us, they said, if you see this, Jason, I'd love to talk to you. My mom has early onset dementia, so we're walking a similar path. And now I support other people who care for their parents through my work. Send me a note here or at quiltcoaching.com anytime. We are taking your calls right now about what you're noticing in your life. In regards to COVID-19, in regards to social distancing, how your lives have changed in the last few days, the last week. The phone number to call is 844-745-8255. Again, 844-745-8255. Anya, are you there in Pittsburgh?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Anya. What have you been thinking about this week?
Well, I have family basically all over the world right now. I live in Pittsburgh. My dad lives in D.C. My sister lives in Scotland. My mom lives in Germany. So it's a lot about, you know, when we all moved away, it was, we're only a flight away. We're all, you know, we can always get on a plane. Like, my family has enough money that I could, like, do that when I need to. And that isn't an option anymore has been insane. And sort of, like, what do we do and what does this mean for how we stay connected in all of this?
So you're feeling like a shrinking of your ability to be close to your family this week.
Yeah, I think it's been a lot of, I mean, I was supposed to go to D.C. and now, like, I have been told I really shouldn't. And that's crazy because that's 4 hours away. And so just, it seems very, very different than when I decided to move away from home and when we decided to sort of traverse across the planet, sort of what that meant for our family and how different that is now.
So, are you talking to them more often?
Do you have a plan then? I mean, if this seems like this is going to be going on for some time, You know, I mean, what are, because I'm thinking about that same thing. I just canceled a trip this weekend to go see a friend. Are you starting to make a plan for how you'll manage to stay connected to your family in this time period if you can't go see them?
I think FaceTiming, we're not really a FaceTiming family, but I think kind of accepting that that is something that, like, we need to prioritize in a way of kind of like, oh, it's just like, I'll see you soon, and that's like enough. It sort of needs to be reshaped and rethought about. And I don't think we really have the answer yet, but obviously it's something we're thinking about now.
It's funny. It's just all might call on us to just really do more in our relationships, right? Like, we can't count on the ways we used to be connected. We're going to have to do more with each other, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that I took for granted when I saw them at least, you know, two or three times a year. And now I think saying
it's
things
different.
Like, I love you more often is just so important.
Anya, thanks for giving us a call, and I hope you are able to find other ways to feel close to your family. That's something I've been thinking about a lot this week, too. Take care. I want to bring in Pasha in Michigan. Hi, Pasha.
Hi. Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited to talk to you both. I love your respective shows and listen to them every week.
Oh, my gosh, Pasha. Thank you.
Thank
you for calling in. Yes. What have you been thinking about this week? What's happening in your life?
So something that's really been difficult for me is having friends who are insisting on traveling anyway, even though, you know, this has been escalated to a pandemic and is a global issue. I have some close friends that have made travel plans and have kept travel plans. And what's hard for me is I'm trying to understand from their perspective, but at the same time, I feel like they're not being considerate about elderly folks and people with compromised immune systems. And so they keep saying, oh, I'll be fine. It's going to be okay. I'm young and healthy. But, you know, what about the people who aren't young and healthy and they're just kind of blatantly, you know, traveling anyway? And that's really stressing me out.
Yeah. You said you're trying to hear it from their perspectives. What is it you're hearing from them? Is it just like that they're like, oh, I'll be fine, or is it something deeper?
Well, a lot of them are saying they'll be fine, but I guess I'm trying to consider, you know, maybe before, obviously, this happened, they scheduled these amazing vacations, you know, a year ago or so, and so they don't want to have to eat that cost, you know, because I don't know if they'll get a refund on it. And so I feel like I can be on my high horse and say, oh, well, you shouldn't travel. But I haven't had any travel plans, so it's not like I had to cancel anything. And so I'm trying to see it from their perspective, but at the same time, you know, I want to try to appeal to them and say, this really isn't safe, and just because you think you'll be okay doesn't mean that others will.
Pasha, I want you to tell your friends that I have had some really lovely conversations with people from airlines over the last few days, because I've had a spring break trip for my family that unfortunately looks like we are going to cancel, and we're not having change fees, and we're getting a credit for the airline. I had a trip to New York for work planned and had another lovely conversation with an airline. So that's one thing to point out. Like there's a lot of things are changing very quickly as far as travel plans and what happens if you change them.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk to them, because I think one friend's trip is tomorrow, and my other friend is going to be coming back this week, so that's definitely something to consider for sure.
Thanks so much for calling, Pasha, and I want to know I want to know what happens after they get back from their trips and what the conversations are like. So please stay in touch.
Absolutely.
Thanks for calling.
It's funny because my friend who, if she gets sick, you know, I'm not going to want to hear about it because I told her not to go.
Yeah, or if somebody gets sick, that's the thing. We can't know. We can't know if
we're asymptomatic.
So that's something to think about as we're all making decisions about where we move around. Thanks for calling, Pasha. I want to bring Dale in Washington, D.C. into this conversation. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how are you? I'm Dale Brown. I'm calling because my concern in here in D.C. is there's a lot of people who live by themselves. Actually, I think we're the second largest number of people who have homes by themselves instead of, you know, in couples and in groups. And what's happening is most of the social activities and most of the big activities, but even the smaller groups like the religious worship services, are being canceled. So, although I guess, I mean, when I went out, I went to the store, we're not like trapped. I mean, there do seem to be people around. You're not really trapped. I'm concerned about the number of people who, you know, don't have a lot of friends, kind of depend on, you know, getting together with people in terms of what's going to happen to them. And I'm playing around with ideas, trying to figure out if it's maybe a good idea to do some kind of phone conference call, something that'll work, you know?
Yeah, and Dale, do you work from home, or what are the other ways when do you leave the house?
I'm retired, and I do a lot of work from home. Right now, I'm facilitating this group of people who are working on social isolation, interestingly enough, trying to look at, you know, what's going on with the loneliness epidemic, trying to get some data about what's going on in D.C. And this COVID-19 epidemic has been a real shock because everybody's expected to sit by themselves at home. And I know for me, I'm pretty lucky. I mean, I have a family, people who we talk on the phone, people who I feel connected to. But the challenge is that many people who are older don't. Some of them have outlived their spouse and don't have children. And there's a lot of isolated people who are now even more isolated. And so that's one of my concerns. And then another problem is the people in nursing homes. My dad is in a nursing home, and they basically kind of locked down the place. They said, don't visit. And that means that all of the residents don't get visits from their relatives. And I think that must be quite frightening for all of them.
I can imagine. And, I mean, I'm thinking as you talk a lot about my own mom, and she lives by herself, and she's in her 70s, and you know, and I'm really encouraging her to stay at home, and I feel bad about that because I don't know what that's going to mean for her, how long she can just sit by herself. And I guess I would love for you, and this is a question for all of our callers, if anybody has ideas or resources on what to do about this question that you're bringing up, Dale, like what people who are isolated, how we can keep them from being isolated if this goes a long time, let's really hear from them. So first off, Dale, do you have any thoughts before I throw that to everybody else?
Yeah, I do have one, which is what we're doing with my dad, is we're just calling him as much as possible. So one suggestion for you and your mom is to make sure, you know, you stay on the phone a little longer with her than you normally would. You know, maybe, you know, just spend time talking to her. I think that simple phone conversations, which I think I mean, a lot of us have stopped talking on the phone and are texting and doing other things. But I think we're going to have to bring phone conversations back because they're a little bit more connecting, I think, than email and texting. And then the other thing I'm trying to figure out is whether there's some kind of game that we can play on the phone, whether there's some kind of conference call, Zoom, Skype, you know, some of these video FaceTime things I think might be helpful.
Yeah.
But we definitely have to think about this and do something because there are too many people who are completely alone and expected apparently to, I don't know, just sit by themselves for weeks.
Well, thank you for that, Dale. Thank you for that advice and for that call. And stay in touch about staying in touch.
I'm going to tell you, I love both of your shows, just so you know. That I think it provides a major connecting influence. So thank you for having my call. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. And I love that connecting influence. That's something to be proud of. Thank you, Dale.
It really is. So we're taking your calls about how your life is changing, how you're adapting to this moment of the coronavirus, us having to be shut in from, cut off from folks. I'm particularly curious if anybody else has thoughts about how we can stay connected in this moment for people who are isolated. I'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 844-745-7255.
8255. I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong number. 844-745-8255. That's 844-745-8255. Or you can tweet us with at Death, Sex, and Money, or use the hashtag USofAnxiety2020. And I think now we want to talk to Shara. Shara, are you there?
I'm here.
You're in Bellevue, Washington, right?
I am.
What's happening in Bellevue, Washington?
A whole lot of panic, I think, and a lot of people trying to figure out what is the measured response to have right now. I feel like things here are very manic, and the rumors are churning, and people are very worried about what these next 6 weeks look like for all of us.
I understand you have kids. Is that right?
Yeah. I have 10-year-old twins. And as of yesterday, they are out of school for the next 6 weeks.
Okay. Tell me what that means in your household. What does that mean for your life?
Well, I am really fortunate that I am able to be a full-time stay-at-home parent. Our teachers originally anticipated for us to be closed for 2 weeks, and our students were sent home with homework for 2 weeks, but clearly our district is trying to figure out what to do for extending online and at-home resources for everyone in our school. But we have a large population of families in transitional housing or students who are facing homelessness who don't have access to a computer to access online curriculum. And so as of this morning, our school district is surveying parents online where they can to figure out how best to serve them. And I'm thinking about my family, but we're fortunate. We have a home. We have each other. I don't have a work commitment, but I am really scared for our families who don't have these benefits.
You know, Shara, I have been thinking about this as well. I live in Berkeley, where the public schools just closed for 3 weeks starting Monday. My daughter's preschool is still open, but it's looking like it will close. And I've been thinking, oh, if I'm working from home and if my daughter is home, like, you know, if I'm home, like, do I extend for people who aren't able to work at home, like, to have their kids come over? And then you get into this, like, thing about helping each other with alongside social distancing. So I wonder if you've thought about that when it comes to, like, your kids' classmates. Like, how do you think about that?
100%. I mean, we're surrounded by households that have two working parents. A lot of our parents are also in industries where they can work from home. But then at our school, we have a unique situation where some of our parents are also teachers or employees of our school district. And we learned yesterday that because of how the contracts work for some of our part-time staff, the teachers, here they're called like support staff instead of teacher's assistant, those people may not have paid leave for the next 6 weeks. And so they have to figure out what to do. And if they have to seek employment elsewhere, there's a good chance that when school resumes, they are not going to be available to come back to school if they have the option to work at our school. And we have a parent in our school who just recently finished treatment for breast cancer. And I think about her. I think about students that we have at our school who rely on 2 meals a day from our school to eat.
Yeah. So many layers. Shara, will you keep in touch over the next 6 weeks? I also want to see some photos of what your 10-year-old twins are doing at home, like what happens to your house when they're home for 6 weeks, okay?
We're 24 hours in and it's already dire straits. They're separated right now.
Well, thank you for calling, and know that there are many parents, maybe not with you right now in this, but across America, who are thinking about this reality hitting their local school districts. So thanks for calling in. I want to bring Zoe in Toronto into the conversation. Hi, Zoe. Are you there?
Hi. Yes.
Hi, Zoe. What have you been thinking about this week?
This week has been very interesting. Things have been changing very fast in Toronto. And interestingly, that my parents are still living in China. Fortunately, they don't live in a very severely impacted region. But still, I felt like this week I have already experienced it before with them. Because when I first started in China, the whole public system, public transport system shut down. Everything just shut down. My parents couldn't leave the house. Everything was, you know, in quarantine, and I experienced it with them while, you know, trying to be supportive, trying to figure out how can I support them while being, you know, across the ocean. And now it's the reverse, because things are getting slightly better in my hometown, but then they are concerned about me, about whether, you know, I will have access to the things I need. So it's kind of an interesting experience for me, because I felt like I am experiencing this pandemic twice.
Oh, goodness. I also wonder, Zoe, while you're managing all of that, I have to ask that there's a lot of anxiety about how people will think about this epidemic and how they will think about it in relationship to race and nationality. And if your family is from China, have you had any concern or any interaction with folks who are applying xenophobia to you or anybody in your family because of this?
Yeah, I think one Canada has a first case. I was definitely worried. Like, Canada is definitely a very diverse country. I do feel very safe here. But, like, at the back of my head, I was like, I probably should think about what should I say when people confront me, because I'm an Asian-looking person, because I'm a Chinese-looking person. Maybe I should say something. Like, it happened. Like, I was like, what if it happens on the train? What if it happens in the food court? What should I say? So it's kind of weird. And I did have a couple interaction where people covered their mouth when they walked past by me. And, they just walked past by you. I can't do any reaction. I'm just like, I hope you are safe feeling that way. I mean, certainly shouldn't touch your face. But like, I couldn't say anything.
You're like, this
right?
is defeating the purpose, and it's rude.
Exactly. And I, like, both, like, my friend and I, we were, like, rehearsing, like, there is more aggressive way for us to, you know, give a response. There is a more educated way. Like, what kind of approach should we take? Gladly, it hasn't happened, but at work there were a couple, like, jokes made around this, you know, like, I'm being Chinese and I'm probably going to bring something, but, like, and that's even more awkward because I know they were kind of joking and we work on a daily basis. So I was like, should I say something? Should I ignore it? Should I just laugh it off? Gladly, it only happened once or twice, and now people really are understanding this is more than, you know, just me being Chinese. This is us being human together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zoe, thanks for calling in from Toronto. It's nice to hear from you. And I'm glad so far. It sounds like your family is well in China. We are taking your calls right now, 844-745-8255, 844-745 8255. We got this note from on Facebook from a listener named Michelle. She says, Marco Polo is an amazing app for asynchronous video messaging that has been really improving the quality of my interactions online. So just picking up on our conversation with Dale about how to have quality conversations with people when you can't share physical space. Check that out if that's something you're looking for. I want to bring in Amanda.
I'm not sure
Portland.
I know what asynchronous video messaging is.
I feel like I started reading that and I was like, I think it means maybe not in real time, like maybe not FaceTime, like asynchronous, like not synchronous. Like maybe you're sending like a text message, but it's video.
Great.
Maybe the control room can help us out on that. Thank
for
you
for
asking,
those of us who are
Kai.
Not quite as digitally savvy yet and who want to use this resource.
The control room says, we will research. And while they do that, I want to bring in Amanda in Portland, Oregon, and onto the show. Hi, Amanda. Are you there?
Hi. Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Tell me about what you've been thinking about this week.
So I work for an international humanitarian organization. It's a nonprofit organization based in the U.S., but I work on specifically an emergency response team, and so we get kind of deployed all over the world to help on various disasters that occur. And so for our organization, you know, they've stopped all non-essential travel, but for my actual department, which is a humanitarian response department, we're continuing to travel, and actually there's, you know, while there's ongoing needs, like there's flooding that's happening in Mali, there's also like major drought that's happening in South Africa. So there's all these other things that we're handling. But then on top of that, we have the COVID-19 response. And so we've been kind of increasing a lot of our health programming in various countries where we work to help communities get prepared. So it's been kind of like this split brain situation where, you know, we're thinking about here in Portland, Oregon, things are starting to shut down, and we're limited in terms of where we can go. But at the same time, my team's like still kind of traveling all over and trying to help communities that don't even have access to soap, that don't really know about proper hand washing routines. And so, it's been a lot in the mind of the organization as well in terms of identifying the safety of us and our families, but then also how can we continue to serve the communities that are also in great need.
Yeah. Do you want to say the name of your organization?
This feels like a core question for so many of us. You know, you're doing it professionally, yeah. But it's just, it keeps returning, coming up in this conversation. It keeps coming up in my life, the difference between sort of the value of keeping myself away from others and the value of trying to be out there helping others. And so what are some tips that you're coming up with about how to make those choices?
Yeah, I think for us, it's kind of what's mission critical as well, because the one thing, too, that we have to think about is for ourselves, if we've been in areas where we could have potentially been infected, then we're potentially bringing that into the community. And so we have to think about what are some other ways that we can continue to support remotely, whether it's doing like Skype messaging or you know, other like online platforms where we can speak with the communities that we're serving, or even staff that we already have that are on the ground, and trying to support them at least with the proper messaging, and then sending in materials and having them do distributions. And so I think a lot of it too is thinking about our own situation. So I know for myself, I have a 15-month-old. And then I also have parents that are in their mid-70s that have underlying medical conditions. And so we've really had to think about, you know, travel for us, is it worth putting ourselves at risk of potentially contracting it and then bringing it back to our daughter and to our parents? And so those are questions that we're constantly discussing with the organization I work for. And they're also thinking through, like, what is what's mission critical and what's not, and what are the needs of the communities we're serving, and can we serve them in other ways that don't involve us physically being on the ground, but still getting them the help that they need.
Wow. Amanda, do you want to just say the name of the organization you work for?
I work for Catholic Relief Services.
Okay. So thanks for doing that important work. I think it's also a reminder that major crises the world over that aren't COVID-19 related are still happening and warranting attention from humanitarian organizations. Thank you for your work, and best of luck for you and your family in these next few weeks.
Thank you so much.
I want to bring Sophia in Cambridge, Mass. Into the conversation. Hi, Sophia.
Hi.
Hi. So you're in Cambridge. What's been happening in your life this week?
Well, a lot of things, of course, as has been the case with many. I am a grad student, and as probably many people have realized, a lot of the universities and colleges are sort of shutting down or going remote. And so that's been the case for me as well. Over the past week, we've learned that first the undergraduates are being asked to not return after spring break. They're basically moving out for the semester. And then for us graduate students, we're being asked to not come into lab. So I'm in a biology program. So we're basically being asked to halt our in-person research, which is you know, obviously a little bit extreme for some of us for the next 6 to 8 weeks at least. And, you know, of course, I think it seems like these are probably the right decisions, but it is a bit hard to reconcile that. And then on the other hand, this coming week would have been our spring break, and I was planning to go home and visit family. But, of course, since Boston is becoming what seems like a bit of a hot spot potentially for COVID, I don't really want to be the person that brings this disease potentially to my family. And by this, you know, bizarre circumstance, I had a family member recently pass away earlier this week unexpectedly. So it's been a bit of a conflict of, you know, I want to be there with them and be there for my family, but at the same time, I can't be the person who puts their health at risk. So a lot of different factors happening sort of all at once, of course.
Yeah. So what have you canceled your travel plans? What have you done instead of travel? How have you been in touch with your family?
I've only been talking to them on the phone essentially for every day this week, giving them updates. I still haven't 100% canceled all potential travel in the future. I think I'm lucky in that I do have a car. So if it comes down to it, I could potentially drive to Colorado, and hopefully that would not be as risky as flying and everything. But, you know, I'm not going to make any decisions until things cool down at least a little bit.
Yeah, weighing a drive to Colorado.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's okay, weighing a drive to Colorado. Like, I have been having some of those thoughts, too, about, like, where would I drive if I needed to drive?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. But
go ahead, Kai.
Well, I was just going to say, Sophia, thanks for calling us and thanks for sharing that struggle. And I hope that I hope that you're able to find a balance. I too am worried about where I'm going to drive this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good luck to you as well, and to everyone listening.
We're still taking your calls live about the COVID-19 outbreak and how we are all coping with it, how we're feeling about it, how it's changing our lives, what we're doing differently. Give us a call. We're at 844-745-8255. Again, that's 844-745-8255, or on Twitter at DeathSexMoney, or with the hashtag USofAnxiety2020. Now I want to turn to Maddie in New Orleans. Maddie, are you there?
I am. Hi.
Hi. What's going on for you this week?
Well, next week I was supposed to marry my partner of 9 years, and just this morning we decided to postpone the wedding.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Yeah.
What did it feel like to make that decision?
Honestly, it's been a real relief at this point because we've just had so many people call, text, and email us in the last few days saying that they've decided to not come, and each cancellation was a real blow. And so now to just be like, hey, you don't have to make this decision anymore, like we've made it, feels crazy but better.
Mm-hmm. What are the ramifications for you guys?
I'm not totally sure yet. The hope is that our vendors are willing to keep our deposits and we can do this again sometime in the future. But I also know that, like, our caterer had done a lot to prepare, and that's a huge financial loss for them. So I'm not totally sure how it's going to play out. This is still only a couple hours old.
And how long had you guys been sort of building up to this moment emotionally? It feels like just that work being undone.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, again, we just celebrated our 9th anniversary on Wednesday, and we've been planning to get married for probably 8 of those years. So we had picked a date and told everyone like 15 months ago. And, you know, it's never been about the marriage for the two of us, because we feel like we've been married this whole time. It's always been about just wanting to get everyone we love in the same room at the same time. And now that stopped being possible. So it's a big disappointment for sure.
Maddie, I have a question for you, and that is, like, do you feel at all an urgency to just get married in a very small ceremony or a courthouse to have that done and then have a party later? Or do you feel like, you know, I want to do this with all of my people? They are witnessing it as it's happening. How are you thinking about that?
Yeah, it still feels like the latter for me. I don't really feel the urgency. Actually, we were just grocery shopping because we don't have any food in the house because we thought we were going to be doing other things. And we were just talking about how we've been thinking about this event for so long that to no longer have it kind of just feels like returning back to the status quo and just our normal life, which is just, you know, how we live. So I think we're still in shock. So we'll see.
Yeah, Maddie, I think you're the only person on planet Earth who feels a return to normalcy.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, best Excellent of luck to point. You and your partner. And I hope, let us know about when you are able to set that date for when you will have this postponed celebration. And we wish you the best. Thanks for calling in the midst
Thanks,
of all
Anna.
Of this. Yeah. We're going to bring in Nancy in Albany, New York. Are you there, Nancy?
Yeah, I am. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Nancy. How's your week been? What are you thinking about?
Well, I pulled my kid from school today, my 7-year-old, my first grader, and we love his school. He goes to Albany City Schools. We're such a fan, and the response from the district about all of this has been so underwhelming. And I understand it's so complicated with funding, with just today the governor gave a statement that schools won't be penalized if kids are not in school 180 days this year. But so far there's been radio silence, and my district has been like, we're encouraging hand washing. Like that's, they have such a big push towards attendance because attendance is an issue, but they're not even stressing if staff members are sick, they should stay home. If kids are sick or their family members are sick, they should stay home. We've just heard nothing. So I have kind of like agonized over it all week. Mm-hmm. And I talked to his teacher, you know, and I said it might be his last day on Friday. Can you send him home with some stuff? But it's just hard to know, was it the right decision? Like, you don't want to be overreactive, but you also don't want to wait until there's like an epidemic roaring through your kid's school. And you think of all the people connected to, you know, our life who are immunocompromised or who are prone to pneumonia. And it's just like, I'm not so much worried about my kids. I'm more worried about being spreaders in our community.
Nancy, as you know, I mean, this is such a big conversation in New York right now about whether the schools are going to close, both here in the city and here in New York City and then throughout the state. And I've heard from so many parents wrestling with what you're wrestling with. And I wonder what was the thing that pushed you over the edge that made you say, you know what, that's it. I'm keeping them home.
It was a conversation with a couple of friends who are in education who, you know, they asked me like about how he does in general, and he's doing great in school. Am I a big fan of like homeschooling? I'll be honest. I was homeschooled. No, I'm not looking forward to it, but I'm going to try my best to keep up with him and, you know, to have us have a disciplined routine. I'm really privileged in that, like, in this season, I'm home anyway. So it wasn't as agonizing as what other parents are facing with, you know, two working parents and what are they supposed to do with their kids with no childcare plan. So my husband's job has not gone remote at this point. So he has to be out there, and I'm already here, so it was just kind of like, I'm just going to pull the trigger. I've been watching what's happening, you know, across the world. I think it's more important to listen to the World Health Organization and have a perspective from various sources than listen to only politicians. So, like, I just am in reality that it could be nothing. It could be a big something. So that's kind of what pushed me over the edge.
Thanks for your call, Nancy, and keep in touch. Let us know how it goes having your child home
Thank you.
Home with you. Yeah, take care. There's a lot for us to talk about, and we're not going to get to all of it during this call-in. This is just the first hour plus of what I imagine will be many hours of us talking about this all together and in our personal lives and with our partners and with our families. So know this is just the beginning, and we'll be having this conversation with you for a long time. But before we go, I want to bring in a Death, Sex, and Money listener who's also a friend of mine, because when I thought about what life was going to look like if I was more sort of confined to home, I don't know. I'm not a domestic person, so I didn't know how to make that comfortable. So I wanted to bring in Samin Nosrat, who is really comfortable at making wonderful things happen in her home. She, of course, is a chef, a writer, host of the Netflix show, and author of the best-selling book Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, who lives here in the Bay Area in Oakland. Hi, Samin.
Hi, Anna. Hi, Kai.
Hi.
Hi. Tell us, like, right. What are you thinking about this week, and how are you thinking about your relationship to being at home?
Well, I feel, to me, this is my ideal. I feel, I mean, I'm like, I've been practicing self-quarantine for months. But I have a pretty privileged situation, so, and also, I don't have anyone else to care for. So it's pretty much like I have the best possible. Everyone keeps checking in with me to find out how I'm doing, and I'm like, oh, no, this is really ideal for me. I spent the morning building a trellis in my garden for beans, and I was like, oh, I'm going one step ahead of everyone who's hoarding beans, and I'm just going to grow my own.
That sounds awesome.
But for me, the challenge actually has been a little bit opposite of everyone else. I have to, you know, because I've been sort of cocooning myself from the outside world, where I've had such a public few years and I'm trying to take care of myself. And so in some ways I'm underinformed, which is not the worst thing, but I definitely had a wake-up call last week where I said to somebody, I was like, I don't understand this mass hysteria. Why is everyone being so crazy? And she really made it clear for me, you know, it's not about you taking care of yourself. It's about, you know, it's about herd immunity and us taking care of each other. And that really was a shift in my thinking about, you know, the kinds of ways that I want to spend my time and how to make sure that people in my own community are not really left by the wayside.
Yeah. Have you done anything differently after that conversation?
You know, I wasn't going out a lot, but I've definitely reduced. I'm just much more careful about going out. I'm much more careful about washing my hands and touching people. I'm a lot less judgmental of everyone else.
Which matters. I feel the judgment, like who's judging whom. I'm really feeling that right now in the Bay Area, you know?
Yeah. And then, you know, like I was paying attention to the Princess cruises that were being docked here. And so I heard that Jose Andres, his organization, the World Central Kitchen, was here cooking. So I reached out to them to see if I could come cook or if they needed other cooks. And it turned out they were actually fine. But it got me thinking about, like, how do I use my resources and my skills to help the people in my community? And just yesterday I found out about that. I think one of your callers earlier was sort of talking about religious pantries, you know, church pantries and stuff. A lot of them are really under pressure and they're closing, which is then putting more pressure on county food banks. So I'm in touch with our county food bank to see, you know, it's not only about herd immunity. It's also about, like, when you're buying 500 pounds of beans, maybe share some with your food bank or with the people in your neighborhood who might not have a pantry or a place to store food. So I think one thing that I have is a platform, so I'm trying to sort of wrap my mind around how do I use that to, let's say, reduce sort of selfish fear and encourage generosity and community-mindedness.
I really appreciate that spirit. I'm trying to do the same, though I have to now be selfish and ask you to use your resources for me, because my partner is, like you, quite a homebody. And I feel like he's very excited about this moment, and I feel like we're going to get into a place where we are competing on cooking and who is doing the best job of feeding each other. And I think I'm going to
I'm coming to your house, Kai.
But I don't think I'm going to compete well, and I'm frustrated about that. And so I currently literally have a thing of lentils sitting on the counter that I'm going to go cook after this. And I'm looking at that, and I'm like, he's going to be underwhelmed with whatever I'm doing here.
What color lentils? What kind of lentils are they?
How do I step up my lentil game?
Are they brown, black, orange?
Green lentils.
Green. Okay. See, for me, the key with lentils are also, for everyone listening, lentils are your go-to legume because they cook most quickly. They're like the best starter legume. So now we're going to start a run on lentils if there hasn't been one.
Nobody hoard lentils.
Everyone buy lentils. Okay, I don't know if you're vegetarian, but if you're not, a little bit of like a piece of ham hock or bacon, little chopped up bacon or pancetta in your lentils is a great way to add some flavor. But in general, with all these beans and legumes that everyone's buying, I would say the answer is you have to figure out spice combinations to make things different, because otherwise everyone's going to be so bored of beans and rice and pasta. You have to and for anyone who has the resources to build themselves a little windowsill herb garden, now's the time to do that, because if we really are going to be living off of pantry goods, you know, that little bit of freshness that's going to come from a little piece of parsley or dill or basil is going to make a big difference. So what I would do with a bowl of lentils is just shower it with fresh herbs and drizzle it with good olive oil. Another thing you can do you could kind of make a shakshuka type of thing with it, where you cook your lentils, and once they're all cooked, you put them into a shallow baking dish and then crack eggs and bake it until the eggs are set. So that's a good one.
All right.
I feel like, Samin, I feel really empowered. I am not a cook, and I'm feeling more empowered. I'm like, maybe I'm going to make a little herb garden this weekend. I love that idea.
I've been thinking about that all week. I'm like, you know, I'm so lucky. We're so lucky to live in California. The weather really supports us being in the garden right these
days.
You are. But I think even if you don't, I think most people probably have a sunny window. And if your excuse was always that you didn't have the time to tend to your garden, now we're all rich in time. You know, we're rich in time. And how do we use that time? And certainly cooking beans takes a lot of time. and a lot of the kind of inexpensive, long-lasting cooking that's going to sustain us, you know, what costs less in money usually costs more in time in the kitchen. And so that's what we have now. And so it's this kind of wonderful way where if you try something that you never thought you could do before, or that you never thought you had the time to do before, you know, now is the time for those multi-day rising bread doughs or whatever. I mean, not that I'm going to do that, but if you always wanted to do it and never could have time, you know, now here you go. Here's this beautiful gift of time for us.
Samin, thanks for calling in. It's really nice to have these tips. It just makes us just to feel a little bit more like you can be in control of your environment at home.
I think,
it's very comforting
to me. Thanks for having me. I love you guys. And I just want to say too, to everyone out there, try to remember, you know, think about the people in your own communities who are really probably at risk and maybe feeling really alone. And there are a lot of ways that we can support people without seeing them, you know, in terms of food. You can drop off some of your lentil soup on the stoop, you know, and just sort of check in with people that way. But I think, you know, the way we're going to get through this and not lose our minds is together, alone together. So take care.
Thank you, Samin. Thank you so much for calling. Samin is the author of Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. Check out her book, her Netflix show. If you haven't already, she can be your companion while you're at home. Kai, that made me feel better. Did it make you feel better?
First off, I feel armed, so I'm gonna go out and get these littles going right up.
You're gonna win the cooking battle.
I sure am. I'm not gonna be put to shame here in my own house. But I really that notion alone together she just left us with. I'm feeling so much of that, and I'm feeling so much of that after this conversation. Just hearing from all these folks and thinking about how I've been talking to my community and friends, this idea of being alone together, that's a really powerful notion that I think
I'm going to try lean into.
Yeah, as you are talking alone in your apartment in Brooklyn on a cell phone, and somehow we're doing this call-in with people all over the country and parts of the world.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So that's where we're going to end this conversation for now. We've been talking for a little over an hour. Thanks for getting together with us. We will do something like it again. And thanks to the team of people who figured out how to pull this off on very short notice and when many people were working from home. I want to thank producers Katie Bishop, Annabelle Bacon, Afi Yellow Duke from Death, Sex, and Money, Verilyn Williams from the United States of Anxiety, our engineers, Jason Isaac in New York, Wende Hinojosa here in the Bay Area with me, our call screeners Emily Mann and Jordan Lauf. Thanks also to Kim Nowacki, Sahar Baharlu, and David McLean. None of us are quite sure what's the next few weeks will bring, but I hope that this conversation, this call-in, reminded you that this is something we are all going to be going through together. We at Death, Sex, and Money are going to make sure, starting next week, we're doing a little thing, one thing to start that's going to be a little different. We are going to be putting out our newsletter more than once a week, just to be in touch a little more often while we are more physically separated. If you're not subscribed to that, you can go to deathsexmoney.org/newsletter. And Kai, how about you? What's happening at United States of Anxiety?
For us, United States of Anxiety folks, just know that we are thinking a lot about what we can learn from the history of previous public health crises. And generally, we're just trying to figure out how we can make the show most useful in this moment. So that's our conversation, and we will talk to you guys all more about that soon.
The United States of Anxiety, you can get it at wnyc.org/anxiety or wherever you get your podcast. I host Death, Sex, and Money, of course. You can find that at deathsexmoney.org or wherever you find your podcast. Kai, thank you so much for doing this with me and for staying home.
Thank you so much. I'm glad on both counts.
We will be in touch. Take care, everybody. I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM Plus to get access wherever you listen. Thanks.